tries to make sense of this bizarre development, but nothing of what he's witnessed seems to fall into place.
I'm trying to enjoy the film. Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. Watch along. I'm Matt Durson.
And I'm John Hunt of Star Trek, The Next Generation comic series Ghosts, the colorist on that, from IDW Publishing.
I am Clay Inferno. If John is done, Clay Inferno, pop culture maven. I don't know why I gave myself
pop culture maven. Very good.
There was a Star Trek credit that I wanted to throw out there, but I forgot what it was, so it couldn't have been that great.
Well, you've interviewed John Delancey and LeVar Burton.
Yeah, but I wanted to have a fresh one.
But John's doing a new one like every time.
I'm trying to. I'm gonna run out kind of soon, but I've still got a couple left.
And maker of Star Trek models.
Yeah, maker of Star Trek modeler extraordinaire.
Extraordinaire. Maven, even.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait till now I have to, we have more movies to go. So hopefully I'll think of it by the next time. But for today, I'll just be the Maven.
Whatever. We've been doing this podcast for long enough. That qualifies us to talk about
movies. Podcast. Yes. I love it when people introduce us at panels and stuff. Like, oh, yeah, I guess we are from a thing.
Yeah. Not a good or popular thing, but
yeah,
a thing.
But we are from a thing.
Yeah. So if you've been listening the last couple of...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, what? If you've been listening the last couple of episodes, which happened, we've been going through the OG Star Trek movies, starting with Motion Picture, Wrath of Khan, and now here we are at The Search for Spock. Just sort of part two of the trilogy, as Harv Bennett sort of mentioned, sort of envisioned it as
the Harv Bennett trilogy. Harv Bennett trilogy.
Is that what people like to call it, or you just...
No, I'm coining that phrase right now.
Excellent. I love coining phrases.
Yeah.
And John Hunt of coining the phrases.
Yeah, like coining the Star Trek phrases.
Harv Bennett is the scriptwriter on this one.
Yeah, as well
he
as...
He actually producer. Was... Yeah. But he was given the green light literally the day, I think, that 2 was...
As he said, 3 days, the long weekend. And he said he was given the green light after the weekend opening.
Right.
Weekend.
And he actually made a joke that 17 different people could have written it because they left so many hints about Spock coming back that it was kind of...
That boy.
But anyways, yeah, it's still good. It was a little... When you look back, obviously they can't... They can't not find Spock and bring Spock back after all that, but
not a lot of searching. It's a port of, it's more like going to get, but that doesn't
you actually
make
know where he is.
Yeah,
but
Star Trek 3 pick up Spock.
Yeah.
They don't have to search for the planet. Can. They knew where the planet was. They knew where Genesis was. They know where Vulcan is. Yeah. All right. I guess you got to search on the planet for it.
But that's easy in Star Trek. The sensor readings are detecting life forms in this sector. I mean, that's basic. They can see what it's like. The government, they can see that there's watermelon on your picnic table. They can find.
Yeah, Why don't we get into it then?
Yeah, why don't we get into it, and then we'll all these debates will definitely come to fruition. We're gonna be watching this again on Amazon Prime. We're at zero, right? Are we all at zero?
We're all at zero. We're at Star Trek 3, Search for Spock.
I will try to get it right this time.
Try not to fuck it up, John Hunt.
Yep.
And here we go. I'm going to cut it down. I'm going to 3-2-1 play. And when I say play, you all hit play. Sounds good?
3-2-1 okay. Play?
3-2-1 play. 3-2-1 and then puke. I'm going to say play.
Gotta stop talking over each other.
What was a cool number? Here we go. 3-2-1 play.
We've all got Paramount logo. I should make
that. Mine didn't play.
What?
Mine didn't play.
Oh, okay. We'll start again.
Do it again, like we've been doing. Everything.
Sorry, go back. I'm sorry.
It's not as though.
Don't sorry.
All right, here we go. 3-2-1. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. 3-2-1 play.
Paramount logo.
All right. Paramount logo. The beer is open.
And now we're in the blue.
Now we're in the blue.
Oh. Is that a financial term? Are we in the black? Are we in the red?
We're in the red. Yeah. What is in the blue? I would like to point out here that when this movie came out back in 1984, and you still had those huge televisions, you know, those like cabinet televisions. We didn't have cable at my house yet.
It was like a
piece of furniture. So, you know, we didn't have cable yet, and our TV was kind of old. My father turns to me at this part, and he's like, "This looks like our TV." that's what I think of Star Trek 3 is the scene where it's kind of grainy and kind of black and white and kind of color, but not quite.
And then, like, is it zooming sucks. In, or is there some sort of a problem?
Okay, I'm still a little behind.
All right, well, you know, we can just hit, you know, we can start over again if you want.
I'm sorry. I was right. Adjusting.
Start over again, and I will tell my story about how great my...
Tell your story about your dad and the TV again. I'm sorry, Clay. I'm sorry, everyone. We're going to cut all this out. Tell all that shit again. Here we go.
Oh, hold on. I got to get myself ready here.
I'm really sorry about that. I'm watching it on a laptop this time instead of the server, so that's pain. Here we go. All right. 3-2-1. Play.
Get the Paramount logo.
Sucks.
Paramount.
Paramount logo.
Say when you get to the blue, and then you know.
We're in the blue. Everyone in the
blue. No, now I'm in the blue. All right. So yeah, I'm like a half a second. It doesn't matter.
All right.
Oh yes.
Let me tell you this great story about my father and me when we went and saw this movie for the first time back when we had those huge console TVs, you know, that were like a giant
theater as well.
Yeah. This one. Yeah, I'm talking about, we saw this movie in the theater with my father, and then he turns to me because we had this old TV, we didn't have cable yet, and there's this tiny little picture, and it's kind of black and white, and kind of color, and kind of crappy looking. He turns and says, "This looks like our TV." And that's what I think of when I think of Star Trek, The Search for Spock. I also think I think it was issue 7 of the DC comic the day I went and saw this movie, and it was all about Pon Farr, and which they touch upon this movie, and I was like, "Oh, by reading that comic like an hour or two before going to see the movie, I knew Pon Farr."
Wow!
Took 7 years to get horny after that, though.
But the cover I think had Savick on it, but it was Kirstie Alley Savick.
I don't want to say
from the new actor.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to say anything. So, I mean, I read that this movie, they had a little trouble with Shatner and his weight. But looking at this from just 2 years before, he looks so much thinner.
Yeah, I had heard something about that they had to come up with 12 different shirts for him.
Yes, that was the thing I read about. made 12 shirts for Shatner. Wait,
ship looks nice.
Yeah. He kept cheating, basically, on his diet.
It's hard, you know, after you hit 40, though, maintain it, yeah, you know, as we know, because I have dad bod.
Well, we're all there, especially during quarantine. You can't even get out and do anything.
Yeah, well, that's why I have to go to the gym.
Trying to eat a salad here. Keep having to mute myself. The croutons are going to kill me.
You have to keep drinking beer to get through these movie commentaries. I mean, like, it's hard to maintain weight. But if it was your job, don't you think like you should probably?
Yeah, well, that's back before they had like trainers and things like that, and you know. So, I would like to discuss. I gotta turn up the sound on this because I don't have any sound going on here. But I love, as I said in the last episode, that I love James Horner's score in Star Trek III more than in Star Trek II. I think it's more as Nimoy kept talking about operatic. It make everything bigger, more operatic, and I feel like the music swells more, and it sounds fuller to me.
You said the other one was a ripoff of Krull and whatever.
Yeah, where he was essentially doing sort of a cut and paste job on that. It I swear, if you watch it, you'll instantly recognize that it's him. Doing the score.
What did James do? It's third billing.
I noticed. I just saw it on IMDb that they put a pause where Nimoy's name should be, just kind of like how I like to leave a nice pause for our dead homies when we're introducing ourselves. So between Shatner and D, Disco D, long pause.
There was a thing where he wasn't, they were trying to keep a lid on the whole Spock thing. And so he wasn't credited with anything. He was kind of, even in the script, Spock is this sort of character called like Malvar or something, or whatever, Vulcan backwards.
that's a tough code to crack.
Yeah, exactly. But like they were just trying to not get the word out that Spock would be back. And so Leonard Nimoy's not credited, although he did it at the very end. And he obviously directed it. We should probably point that out.
Well, that's a whole story. Ralph Winter, by the way, is one of the producers on the X-Men movies. Oh, very well.
The good ones or bad ones?
I think both ones. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What's interesting about
first one, I recognize them.
The Superman movies and the X-Men movies, like they're all like kind of like Donner related family members and stuff, like all the way through, like, so when you get up to the X-Men movies, you see a lot of like Donners listed as the producers too.
So there's Laura Schuler Donner
So the story of Nimoy directing was that Nicholas Meyer didn't want to come back for Star Trek III because he was like, Spock's dead. I don't know how to do this resurrection thing. He kind of made a big deal about it where he was like, you went too far putting the Spock casket at the end, you know, and hinting that he's going to come back.
He didn't like that.
He was very, and so they're calling back the original cast going, we're going to do another one. This one was this one made money, so come on back. And they get around to talking to Nimoy, and he says, I would like to direct. And I think it might have been Michael Eisner that was like, that's great. Nimoy directs the search for Spock. And they're like, okay, good, great. And then weeks go by, and Nimoy doesn't hear anything. And so he's like, what the hell's going on? No one's taking my calls. He finally gets a hold of Eisner and says, what's the deal? And Eisner's like, I can't have you direct this because you hate Star Trek. You had to put in your contract that like you, Spock, had to die. And I just don't know if I can have you direct the movie. Yes, exactly. Spock. He had his book, I Am Not Spock. And their thinking also was that like if they don't get Nimoy back, well, they've got young Spock here on Genesis. They could just kind of slip in young Spock. They're like, you know, it might not work. It might, but you know, something. But Nimoy says, that's not in my contract. That wasn't in my contract. You know, you can go to the archives and pull out my contract and read it for yourself. And he's like, well, if that's not true, then okay. And they come in tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll have a meeting. And then Nimoy was set to direct the search for Spock.
Well into production, though. I mean, not filming, but like production. They had already started like doing a lot of the decision making and stuff. It's kind of funny. And then I love the, there's a quote from Roddenberry where he says they hired a director they couldn't fire.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So I don't know what Roddenberry here.
Same bridge.
Yeah.
From,
same bridge from the previous two movies.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
It always it's seems all, a little slightly different. You know what I mean?
Maybe it's after four, it changes in five and in six. They do redress it a little bit here and there. Obviously,
like
you've got your
burn marks on the wall, they had like for the X-wing when you wanted it to look battle damaged, you can put the extra stickers on it.
Yes, it's exactly that. They just took big stickers and slapped them all over the bridge, and all the graphics are new on the bridge. That they were easier, like they didn't have the problem like they had on the motion picture and in Star Trek 2 where like you had to line up the camera speed with the projections and stuff. They had fixed all that so that you could just start filming.
So I have a question for you, John. This ship was something they call a kit bash, is what I heard.
Yes.
Which is just means like a bunch of model kits thrown together, basically.
Yeah, you're essentially just taking a bunch of things and jamming it all together to make
that's
something.
Why the Millennium Falcon looks like it does, right?
Yeah, if you look at the Millennium Falcon, it's covered with tank parts, and if you know anything about cars and motors and stuff, you can see that there's like a transmission on this. I didn't either until I started building cars a few years ago, and then I started recognizing a lot of the parts on things. And there are people that are out there that will go through and catalog every single part that's on there. They're like, that's from a Tamiya something tank, Sherman tank from this particular, you know, and there are people out there that have tracked down all the parts that are on these kits and stuff.
Wow. And then there's Christopher Lloyd.
Yes. Is he Krug or Krug? I couldn't remember.
I don't know. I heard.
I thought it was pronounced both ways, but.
Tomato, tomato.
Can I need to talk to Matt for a second here?
All right, I'll leave.
It's fine. It's fine. Gary Wolf was saying, you should listen to my audiobooks. And I said, you know what? I would like to listen to Roger Rabbit on audiobooks. And so I started listening to Who Censored Roger Rabbit. It's like a 7 or 8 hour book. And it's funny, except for that they don't have like the, you know, Charlie Freister doesn't do the voice, and they kind of, the rabbit is like a brown rabbit, and I can't really picture him being like the same as the Roger Rabbit from the movie, but you do your best to stretch the imagination.
Okay.
But it's very, very cool book. It's very cool. I like it.
I feel, I assume we're talking about that because Christopher Lloyd is in the movie.
Right. Played a villain. I think, apparently Leonard Nimoy wanted like a real theatrical.
Did they try to get Edward James almost first?
I don't know.
I was trying to find that in my research, my last minute research today. I think that might have been the case, or it was on some Star Trek movie. I think he was going to play a Klingon. It didn't work out for some reason.
So this was just a real Klingon. Right? This woman, we were supposed to believe that this woman, Vulkris, was his lover, I think.
Yeah, and she was up. But he's willing, you know, to take her down because she knew something she wasn't supposed to know, and that's how Klingons operate. Despite the fact that he loves his weird dog. His weird puppety dog.
A Fifi Rebozo or something like that. That's what that thing is called.
This shot here of the Enterprise entering space dock, they reused the background plates on this and imposed the Enterprise D for a first season episode of Next Generation. And I don't know if it was like they were trying to save money or they were doing like an homage or both, but it was quite interesting.
Yeah, it's got to be the money, dude. It's got to be. They must have just been like, no one's going to know.
John Hunt knows. Yeah, I know. And there are Trek fans way more hardcore than me that would.
You're not even a nerd.
Yeah. Well, it's because, you know.
I want to bring this up right now because it's one of my favorite things of just about this movie, right, was the reference on Seinfeld. I don't know, maybe.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Or I'm going to bring it up right now. So, of course, I don't know if anyone does remember, George's fiance Susan dies at the end of a season. And George didn't want to marry her anyway, so he was kind of happy, actually, when it happened. Anyways, they start the next season, and Susan's parents are obviously upset, and they have a funeral and all this. And Jerry tells them that she's not really gone as long as you remember, as long as you remember, which is what Bones said at the end of Star Trek 2. So they are inspired to do a whole thing. Oh, there's the Excelsior, by the way. So anyways, so then, like, Kramer says, oh, I know, like, because Kramer gets all into the Khatra, because he's taking
for that's what I remember at the time, going, wait, is the Khatra a real thing? Until until it's revealed later in the episode.
He mentions it. No, that's got it from Star Trek. And he says, I know, Jerry will tell you the Wrath of Khan is a better thing. And then George gets all mad and goes, it's just, it's hilarious. But that made me realize, like, a very important thing, that not just nerds, like anyone can like these movies. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's not just Trek nerds, It's, I'm like, oh, phew.
And you and I will occasionally reference the hell of a thing when Spock died or whatever the line is.
No, that's okay. I love the thing Spock died. I mean, his fiance was dead, and he said that Spock had died. But there's also another thing in Seinfeld. I'll get to it later.
Okay. Well, we just there was just a cameo of Yeoman Rand back a minute or so ago. And when I saw it in the theater, I was 11 when this came out, and I was like, "Who is that woman? She looks so familiar." I wasn't able to place who it was, and I thought it was the woman from Taxi, the redhead, whatever her name.
Watching Chris Malloyd.
Yeah. I thought maybe he pulled some strings.
I don't know if this.
By the way, Chekhov says I'm not crazy. There.
I'm not crazy.
Oh,
this movie seems to look
because like so much better
than the other ones.
Better,
like it looks like remastered or something. This looks like a very modern looking, more sci-fi,
tonally. I'm just kidding. Totally. So here's Spock's boring quarters again, I guess.
Yeah, but Nimoy this time around made it more atmospheric, and that was one of the things he had set out to do. He was like in Wrath of the Khan, this was just sort of like a room with an infinity mirror. Now it's got a little bit of a like an air of mystery. It's got some ambiance. It's got a little the whatever.
Still with the Itic. Yeah,
it's got the Itic right there
with the big
still hanging.
Mirrory, yeah.
Bones' eyes are so scary. He looks so cocaine freaky. Eyes. It must be the disco eyes.
And he hasn't shaved too. He's got like a 2 or 3 day stubble.
Kind of looks like Colin.
They probably
Robinson
gave him contacts.
They probably, Colin Robinson. This scene did freak me out. Like I didn't know what was. I was like, what? Months away, it's on bulk.
But they're not on Earth, are they? They're on a starship space station.
Well, they're
orbiting Earth, so.
It's like driving around your neighborhood. You're home.
Yeah, essentially. You're one transporter away from your own apartment.
It's like saying my dad or John lives in Boston. You know, you don't. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I live in North Dakota or wherever we established.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. You live in North Dakota, not anywhere near my dad. Not three towns over from my dad.
No.
Certainly not.
No. Nope.
So here's Admiral Murrow, or as I call him, Out of the Question Man.
I always like Scotty's reaction here. He's like, but, sir, you know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Scott, but there will be no reflection. There it is, but sorry. So
you
I want to do
that.
Just to finish
the way
the
time, you fucking totally just. I was listening to I was listening and watching, and it was like you were saying it. That was perfectly timed to my sync.
Oh, I thought I was a little behind. So to finish off the Steinfeld reference, this Admiral Murrow played Joe Temple on Seinfeld, which was the guy that George had to go. He was in a book club and he wanted to watch the movie of Breakfast at Tiffany's instead of reading the book. So, but they had rented the movie. He got the address, went to their house to watch it with them. You know, had no idea who they were. So, another Seinfeld reference.
Wow.
Kirk around then too, I think. He was a lieutenant.
The Enterprise, by the way, be a little older than 20 years old if you're going by Star Trek.
So as we talked about last week, here's Kirk redoing Carol Marcus's Genesis video. There's Dan Fielding, a.k.a. John Larroquette.
Which, who was reteamed with Shatner on Boston Legal in the last couple of seasons.
Oh, about that. It was strange to have Jim from Taxi and Dan from Night Court both on the same bridge.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I guess here he is redoing her Kickstarter video, basically.
Yeah. Well, Nimoy was like, look, we've got this footage. Let's show it again. We've got it. Let's do it. And it's, because it was the first time anything like this was done.
Right. And also, I mean, you know, Star Trek, Star Trek 3, it's a sequel. I mean, but it also can, you know, sort of references that there was a TV show. It was episodic, if you will. You know, we're still continuing the story from the second one.
Yes.
They make canon.
But from the second one, not from the first one, really. Nothing from one goes to two. So much.
No, not really. This is 2, 3, and 4 were, you know, like a trilogy, basically, within the whole thing.
Yeah, it was like a soft reboot. You know what I thought was interesting about the JJ movies was that they incorporated at the end of the first Trek film and in part of the second Trek film was that they incorporated some of the motion picture style uniforms. Mm. Like Captain Pike is wearing it. He's in his wheelchair at the end. And
Yeah.
I always thought I liked that. I was like, oh, that's a good use of those uniforms. I'm glad they did that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the Grissom, which I also thought was a very cool looking
ship. It was named for Gus Grissom.
Yes. Yeah. What kind of ship?
We started on Mrs. McSorley, all right?
It begins with an O, and I can't remember. No. I built it. It's a little tiny one that they built. I took a picture of it next to a grilled cheese sandwich to give it scale.
What if it was still a really big sandwich?
Inching closer I'm pretty to sure next that gen. This. Too, right? So it's like kind of the effects and the ships, everything kind of is starting a little bit more like next gen, which is something I like. The ships and stuff look really cool.
The Asian woman at the I guess it's the navigation station, I'm pretty sure she appears I think she appears on the Excelsior later. Like watch for that.
Why? Right. Is she taking a vacation from the installation station?
Either that or she's got a twin. Why does she have a pink chair?
Oh, I don't know. It's very pretty.
She's a girl.
It looks like she's about to get her makeup done.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that nowadays, Robin Curtis, who took over for the prima donna, she is now a real estate broker.
Really?
Good for her.
On Vulcan.
Yeah, on Vulcan. On Genesis.
Well, Genesis blows up, but they leave Run Vulcan.
Yes, they do. Get into that.
It's like she's kind of this acting gig.
Yes, the pink hair and
green
costume.
She stopped acting in 1990. Boy, we are talking all over each other like crazy in this one. Sorry. Oh, I didn't mean everyone shut up now.
Well, I thought that other people had something to say. I didn't have
it. Well, I was saying that she stopped acting in 1999.
Mm. So she had a good long life. Or a good long life. A good long career.
She's still alive as of this recording.
Still alive.
So they knew right away that this is Spock's third.
Yeah, so there's the search for Spock already finished.
Right.
21 minutes into the film.
It's like Google and like autocomplete. It's like search for SP and then it says OCK and they press enter. Yeah. And then there then they're, it's just like a Google map and it just shows them exactly where he is. There he is.
Yeah.
What happens if you search for
something? I don't know. I guess I always
Google.
No, I,
fun? I'm going to look.
Everyone's got pink chairs.
So, yeah, they want to go and look for, obviously, because there's not supposed to be any life forms. But, I mean, yeah. I guess I'm always would wonder, like, why is Genesis such a quarantined subject? No pun intended. They, that's the term they use. We don't, but we're in quarantine right now.
They're allowed to say it. It's their word. It's their word. They can say it.
Is it? But it's like a political controversy for whatever reason.
Yeah, because they've created a device that can make new planets. You know, yeah. It would destroy the new Matrix.
That's right.
I love Kirk's tracksuit at this part. He's just like he just came from filming Battle of the Network Stars and then just went right to the set.
Yeah, he ran in his tracksuit. Yeah. I feel like this is Nichelle Nichols' real clothes. I feel like she didn't wear any.
The Emperor has returned.
She seems like she'd be like real hippie type, you know, real artsy, like you know, yeah. That she probably does like oil painting spare time.
And here, yes, Sarek, who appeared on the show as Spock's father.
And he appeared as a Romulan in the Balance of Terror episode prior to that. And I didn't see them in order, so I was like, wait, why is Spock's dad on the bad guy's ship? But he wasn't. His dad, obviously.
Obviously.
He was the bad Romulan.
Bad Romulan.
I remember your brother did like he was doing his own like Mad Magazine version of like you know parody of Star Trek 3, and he did the scene where he did the mind meld, and he's like Kirk, you're crying. He's like you stuck your finger in my eye.
I always thought it was kind of funny that he just throws the other people out.
Where did they go? They're just hanging out in the hallway, drinking. Also,
drinking his booze.
Also, or if they left, then Scotty shows up in the mid mind meld or something.
Right, he's like, because he thought it
was Sarek, Mr. Scotty. Is Sarek
in next? So wait, because he thinks Kirk.
Yes.
Left him there. And then he says, "Well, he didn't tell me that he had an immortal soul." He's like, "He would not have spoken of it openly." It's like, "Screw you, man! How am I supposed to know?"
It's like a metaphor for being gay.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, back in the day. You didn't speak of it openly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, they're all upset. Spock is dead. There it is. I must have your thoughts. It's like it has them.
In the series, Spock and Sarek's relationship was a little strained because Sarek didn't want him to join Starfleet.
That's true.
He sort of the Vulcan sort of looked down upon that.
And in 09 as well. The only emotion I wish to convey is gratitude.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want him to be dead. I mean,
he didn't. I'm just giving you a little background between the father something. And then Clay can give you all the background that happened on Discovery that I don't know about because
Save the background for the podcast, okay? Oh, wait.
All right. But Sarek is on Discovery.
Sarek is on Discovery, too. But also, yeah, I mean, he's got an okay actor over there. No Mark Leonard, though. That guy's a master.
But I mean, yeah, he is the star. He's the Vulcan rep, you know. So like, he's like in Starfleet, kind of in a way. He's like
the original series, right? Don't they?
Yeah. Yes. In Journey to Babel, and also in the original series, like Vulcans, it was like mysterious. Like McCoy was always like, "I don't know Vulcan anatomy," and blood, you know. So it was like, "Oh, I see you've got a Vulcan on your ship." It was like a big deal. But then in like every other Star Trek spin-off and whatnot. It was like, you know, Vulcans were a dime a dozen after a while. They lost their mystery, you know. So.
Yeah.
Well, then what
was L-E-N-A-R-D. No O. No Leonard. It's Leonard. Quick. To the point.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have time. Like
a Vulcan. Like a Vulcan is. To the point. Now they think he's dead. And there's no, because he couldn't mind meld with Kirk because there was the glass between them.
Yes.
So Sarek's like, all right.
So but then Kirk is like, look it, I've got a cop. We can watch Wrath of Khan on Amazon. You want to put it in? Want me to call it up? I mean,
it's like in Spaceballs with like, well, just watch.
like, because really, I mean, I know we're doing this for story purposes, but why would Kirk have access to these tapes at his house? At these
he's like
files.
Three, right. Three, two, one. And play. And no, you have to hit play at the same time.
That we saw.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, play. Oh wait, I didn't hit play.
I'm a little out of sync. A Vulcan is never out of sync.
Even in the 23rd century, we have to listen to.
Yeah. Run, Marty! Zip, 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 zip. I hate that in movies when they do that. I'm like, I have never watched anything where I'm hearing the. What it's like, fast forwarding or rewinding.
I bet I would have always turned that option on if it was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if there was an option, I would have loved it here. Oh, here we go. And there we go.
It's also like
Harv Bennett says they just improvised.
Yeah, yeah. It was a last minute addition to the film where he's like, what do you, could you come up with something that might leave an opening for Spock? Come back, maybe, kind of, you know.
Put it on these data tapes.
But this is the data tape. But I mean, it seems like, okay, so he bombed, you know, yeah, he murdered someone else. Like, I mean, like, why is that like such like a wait a minute, Spock? Would have found a way. It's like this, like, it's like, oh no, somebody else. They're up.
I always like to say Spock would have found a way, but no one knows what I'm talking about.
What if it was a better movie if it was Scotty?
If it was what?
If he did it to Scotty.
If he did it to that random guy that was holding Kirk back.
Anymore. Have fun. But so yeah, I like Sarek really kind of puts it on him though. He's like, "Well, if you're his friend, you'll get him to Vulcan." It's like,
that's pressure for
him. I am his friend.
By the way, the Grissom is an Oberth class starship, which and it's a science vessel only, so which is why it's taken out so easily.
It's pronounced
Wessel. Oh, right. Sorry. I wasn't practicing my Russian.
I like that this guy's been sitting at that desk looking at that beeping photon tube on the screen for like...
the cinematographer for this movie, whose name escapes me currently, wanted to shoot this in Hawaii after seeing the remake of King Kong there, but everything was done on sound stages, and it's kind of obvious that things were done.
Yeah, there was like one location shot, I think, in the whole movie. I don't know where it was.
It's at the end. It's the staircase when they're.
Oh, really?
It's not even. And it's like mostly matted out. So.
Yeah, it's all ILM and Paramount soundstage. Why would you do this? Why would you open the cast?
Well, if you're finding a life form there, I guess.
But if you knew the life form.
I don't know why you do it. You're just like, because you're fucking creepy and morbid. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do it, I guess, to move the story.
And they're like, why is Spock running around naked?
let's look at the deck guy. I mean, that's really the only thing I can imagine.
Let's see how much he's decomposed.
Yeah.
Spock screams, provided by Frank.
Hey, I'm gonna give myself a no prize, by the way. Oh, I know Frank Welker's the screen. Yes. Oh, that is out of the question. Here we go. I'm gonna give myself a no prize and say that because he knew the proto matter was in there, and he wanted to see if Spock was like somehow alive. I think David Marcus knew.
Yeah, no, I'll be mailing you out your no prize this week.
Thank you.
Answer my like you're giving yourself a no prize. That's very good.
I answered my own question.
Yeah.
So my brother, I was talking to my brother about it, because he was all interested in our Wrath of Khan one, and I said, well, now we're doing Star Trek's Fuck, and he's like, you know, his series is why you just get Spunk and bring him to Vulcan. Like, if there's a chance it would bring the guy back. Look at those fucking drinks they're getting, they got going on there.
that's what I'm having right now.
They look like those Instagram coffees that people are making that are all like three layers.
Right. And I have to also say, Admiral Monroe is kind of a dope if he thinks Kirk's just going to be like, okay. Well,
I would like to point out that Kirk was a rule follower until this movie. And then this is where he sort of gained the reputation of being a rebel, you know, because he was always a by the book kind of guy on the series for the most part.
But I love Rebel Kirk.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. But but we didn't really get Rebel Kirk until now, which is here's one of my favorite lines where he's like, the word is no. I'm therefore going anyway.
And then I look at Sulu. You can count on our help right there. What if Chekhov's like, oh.
Oh, thanks for speaking for both of us. What's with the creepy guy in the background there?
Whoa. Cool video. Now that looks like a fun game.
Yeah. Let's play biplane video game.
In the 23rd century.
Like you have to shoot, but it needs to go through the propellers.
Yeah. Did that Starfleet officer back there, did he look like he was wearing like dentures or something?
I love this Playboy bunny here, like hitting on McCoy.
Yeah, wow.
That's got lights on her shirt.
Eyeshadow.
She's like, don't I recognize you from Studio 54? What are you doing in these parts?
Do you shave your beard? You're not wearing a big medallion anymore.
He's got like neck shirt on underneath his jacket.
I went to college with a lot of people that look.
I do like Kirk saying Spock. I mean, not Kirk. I like Bones saying Spock lines, though. It's really funny.
Yes. It makes me laugh. This guy to me looked like Mark Leonard with big ears. Although he looks like he has a lisp. But it was an ode to Yoda, the way this guy spoke sort of backwards.
Yeah, it is my backwards friend, as he calls him.
Yes. He's got some
piercings, though, that are definitely sort of in the now. Like, that would work in the...
Yeah.
The teeth, though.
He's also got some weird hair stuff going on his... upper lip and
and chin there, the lower lip. I need more.
You guys want to see a picture of the guy that plays Sarek in Discovery?
I'm gonna text it to you. I've seen him.
Are you going to send it to the chat? Or
am I... No, I texted it to you. You think a really goofy face.
Jesus! I love that reaction. It's so overact. It's planet forbidden.
He is making a douchey face in that picture.
And then it's Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
Suppose we all look the same way that you don't, Kathan. I mean, look like Paul Weathers. I'm sorry.
I went for the Lando.
That's a douchey.
Well, if Lando and Carl Weathers had a baby.
Well, like 1984 Carl Weathers. Yeah. Not Mandalorian Carl Weathers.
That is a good gag with the neck pinch.
I love that gag. I love the way he sticks his tongue out like he's really trying to do it.
And the raised eyebrow too.
Yeah, I mean,
Matt painting.
All right, I'll take a drink. So here it's snow in the same sector. Especially she's got a camera bag there from the
It's like our old, it's my old like VHS camcorder.
Those things are always so heavy. Do you ever have one that had?
Can I say how? I know this was 1980. Yeah, they were heavy. I want to say how when I watched this recently, when he says we're moving into the Federation Funny Farm, I'm like, how awful are you people?
Jeez.
Mentally
ill. Sounds like nowadays. I thought the 23rd century was supposed to be a little more. Tolerant.
Funny Farm
people with
was
mental
a,
disabilities.
Was in the lexicon in the 80s. People said Funny Farm a lot. It was a movie Chevy Chase.
It was a movie with Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase?
I watched that
recently. That was actually also one of my favorites. But he says, how many figures am I holding up? That means actually a really good...
That's a good gag.
I know Bones said it's not very damn funny, but it is very damn funny.
And of course, this scene with George Takei was very upset about being called Tiny. He fought against him. He's like, that's not funny. Until he went and saw the screening, and he's like, oh, no, that gag totally works because I just kicked this guy's ass who's like 6 feet taller than me. He's like, ouch to me.
Did he not think it would work because he kicked his ass? Like, he knew he kicked his ass, right? Yeah. Did he not read that far ahead?
And he is tiny compared to this guy. All of us are, except Josh.
That's right.
Probably taller
and
than that.
Guy. I'm just going to blow this up because you're a dickhead.
Oh my.
We don't put our our arms in our sleeves.
I love these guys.
Some guys we've made that reference before too. We haven't in a while though.
I actually have said that before. I've said, you're taking me to the promised land. I've said that before, too.
And this guy was on Hill Street Blues, but I know him better as the dad on Doogie Howser.
Is it James Sicking or something like that? Sicking? I don't remember. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yes.
It's got two Ks.
To K? That was the
That's
last
another one. Laugh. Another big laugh there.
Don't call me Tiny.
Nichelle Nichols. I'm not going to say insisted, but asked. She liked to wear the Uhura miniskirt, the Starfleet miniskirts there. So they made one special for it, even though all the characters, the female characters in these films, when this uniform was in use, had pants, trousers.
But, if you got to show it off, baby. You
hey, know what I mean? Doesn't want to look at Uhura's games, huh?
That's right. Wait till we get to that final frontier.
She's got games to go to her eyeballs.
We've seen Nichelle Nichols in person.
I know. I mean, it was like 25 years after this.
Yeah, it was a while after this.
You're going to sit in that closet. I remember thinking this is like a big victory for women or something.
Okay, back in the club. Kind of like
oh, God. Harve Bennett sort of was like, yeah, the line where he says, have you lost all sense of reality? He says, that's not like a sentence someone would speak in English, but he's like, I needed to set up this other line for her.
Right. It doesn't, it's so like hackneyed there, yeah. This is reality. It's just fantasy. Fantasy Island, starring Ricardo
Montalban.
It's kind of where Zoll Hoover does basically in this movie.
That's not a great transporter. That's not a great one.
I agree. I don't like the transporters in the movies. I don't come on.
I like the Klingon one better than the Enterprise one. That one's cool looking, the orange and the little lights.
Yes, I'll go with that. This, not so much.
Two trainees. Kind of had a coat kind of like Kirk's.
Actually. Anyway. And he had an Indiana Jones hat, too. Imagine if you put those together.
Yeah, I should have. It wasn't quite as loop. The collar is really
like,
there.
Chekhov's outfit looks like... Wednesday from the Addams Family, like the top part, like that weird costume.
That's like the look that every single girl has on Riverdale. They're always wearing that shirt. They're always wearing like a solid colored shirt or sweater, and then the white collar poking out of it. And I'm always like, oh, nice Riverdale shirt. The 80s influence on these costumes is just fucking crazy. I mean, I'm just having a flashback to my coke dealing uncle like swinging by and giving us toys.
Wow. All right, this is John's favorite scenes. We should all be quiet. Let him just.
This is my favorite scene of this movie, which I don't know if anybody else has brought this up or not, but it is much like Space Battleship Yamato / Star Blazers, where they steal the Argo / Yamato. It's very similar.
It is very similar to that.
But I love both of them.
It's great. No, it's always great. If I wrote a space story, I would definitely have the characters steal their ships. This is a big moment, stealing the Enterprise. It's very cool, though, to have the two ships and the, you know, the Excelsior
going. And have it
going
backing out, which is, like, really odd.
Beep, beep.
It's kind of...
Calm yourself, Doctor. Yeah. I'm watching this.
But this is Scotty. He's like, hey, and now Scotty's like, what? Like, Scotty had to...
I can't stop seeing Wednesday Addams now.
I'm sorry. Well, watch on the Excelsior. There's RoboCop's dad. I think you'll see the Asian woman in the background. The Asian woman is the same one that was on the Grissom. See, isn't it?
Is she just an extra?
It's very similar.
I can see her. She does
a lot of stuff happens on these.
I'm kind of like that. The Excelsior is NX.
What?
Sorry, I was speaking.
You're talking. Yeah, everybody keeps talking. All I end up here is this blah 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 blah. The NX, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the NX.
Yeah, and then they changed it to an NCC in Star Trek VI.
That's less cool.
But the series Enterprise, the NX-01.
Yes. Thank you for jumping on that grenade because I was ready there for that one.
I'm sorry I stole your thunder then.
No, I'm glad you did it. It sounds better coming from you. You have more credentials.
Because he colored Star Trek Ghosts.
Yeah. The damage and stuff on the Enterprise here was done with using like aluminum foil and stuff.
This shot is also really good. Really nice, like effect shots in here.
Despite the fact that this was still a fairly low budget, they took all of the money that they could and threw it into the ILM effects shots.
$60 million, it's like nothing. $16 million. That wouldn't even pay for William Shatner now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Return of the Jedi, which came out the year before, was like 30-something million.
Oh my god!
And the space dock was built as a like a 6-foot model.
Look at that! I mean, two ships in the same shot.
Two chicks at the same time.
Two chicks at the same time.
the space dock model, which
somehow I just keep thinking.
Will you stop talking about this digitally remastered?
I mean, it just looks so good.
I'm trying to talk about the 6-foot space dock model before we're not in the scene anymore.
Hurry up before we get out of it.
The whole thing was built 6 feet tall with neon lights in it. And then it was like made as like transparent aluminum. And then they light blocked it and painted over it and then scratched out all the little lights. And that's how they did that.
Wow. All those lights? That's taking a while.
Yeah. Right. Well, rather than you think.
The toilet flushing sound that this thing makes. Like it's literally it doesn't sound like any noise or shit. But it's like,
whoa. And you'll notice that in Star Trek VI, the Excelsior has a different bridge set. which on the model, they changed the bridge dome on it to sort of match the fact that it was different. It's much smaller and better looking.
I say this a lot too. The more they overtake the plumbing, the easier it is to step up the drain. It's actually true. As someone who works in technology.
As someone who's a plumber.
As someone who works in plumbing, right?
They never addressed, at least in the movies, what happened to Transwarp Drive.
It never came up again, did it? I guess, was it? Because you could literally take three bolts out of the ship and it dies. Yeah,
it doesn't work anymore. I mean, they may have addressed it on some other show or whatever, on like Voyager or something. But they never brought it up. Just like they didn't bring up the fact that they had a cloaking device in the Bird of Prey. They don't bring that up.
Right. He says it costs us a lot, but what does it matter?
Well, I like the Enterprise at Warp. Like, it kind of has the rainbow from the first movie. Kind of a
whew. Yeah, but it looks less disco-y. Trail.
Yeah. Less of course, Kelly. These guys look
now, look
it,
if you were
like
a kid
on Star Wars on Hoth.
If you were a kid and you were naked, would you go to the snow?
Yeah, if you're a Vulcan.
And then sit there?
Yeah.
Keep running,
kid. I would have walked back to the part where it's tropical.
Well, he had no brain, right? He transferred all his knowledge to. Oh, she's going to kiss
this
him.
This 7-year old.
You move the hair
really
back.
Horny.
And... Don't talk like that. That's...
He has Ponfar at 7.
Yeah, later. Not this part. Oh.
No, we're not at Ponfar.
Not this early on. I'm sorry to be gross.
Right
even
now,
though,
still,
even though he's only
still
like
looking
14.
Looking at his dad's magazines and not really understanding what they mean.
he's looking at sex magazines.
They're like all about quantum mechanics. relations. International relations. Interstellar relations. Pardon me.
I love this. There she is. This is the same one.
Isn't it? I don't know. I think so. I could be wrong because I don't want to be that guy that's like, oh,
my backstory,
you know,
my no prize is that lots of stuff happens on these star bases. So she got transferred right that day. So that's why she's on both ships. That's why you see her.
But she was on the ship earlier. I'm going to say that she has a twin sister and they win. Look, did you
look
see that
guy?
Look
at
the guy's face. He's like,
look at extras.
John, like no prize coming your way. I'm going to send you that no prize.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm AC Slater. We're manning the Kimonic.
Hey, Preppy. We've got a Klingon coming in.
I had to say, we were talking about the doughy Starfleet guys.
Yeah, we were.
This guy's not really doughy, but this captain of the Grissom, he's kind of dopey.
He's also the most, he's like the whitest person you could have working at Starfleet.
He's like middle management Starfleet guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should, yeah.
Executive vice president of the fucking some shit.
Remember I was sad. I thought the Grissom was such a cool looking ship, and there it went.
The Bird of Prey's bridge was actually something else that they had redressed from like another movie or show or something, which you'll notice in Voyage Home, the bridge is completely different.
It definitely looks more like the Enterprise bridge in Voyage Home. Just a little more green.
It looks better. This one looks more like they're at like a nightclub. It's got like purple and blue and pink lights.
Go
and stuff. Yeah, Dane's
like Kelly loves the Klingon bridge.
The computer graphics in kind of look like what you could do on a Commodore 64 or something. Too, but I 1984,
as endorsed by
probably
Shatner's
VIC 20 Commodore 64, or like in War Games, like those.
So he even spoke with his voice, like even had the voice down.
Yeah, he's got that Nimoy impersonation down pat.
So in the making of documentary I watched, all they showed was this scene, basically. Just kept, and they're like, Leonard Nimoy was like, I need more wind.
He
just
the original making of document.
Yeah, it was definitely like VHS.
I remember that. I remember when that was on. Yeah. He used to do a show called Lights, Camera, Action, I think, and they would play that on Nickelodeon on like Saturday afternoons at like 4:30, and there was an episode where they did this whole making of Star Trek 3.
Nice. I would have loved that.
So I want to ask your opinions, I guess, on I spoke about the proto-matter and like, is it bad? Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, she says, like your father, you changed the rules. Like, it was like a really, like he cut some corners. It's like, what does it mean that he used proto-matter in the Genesis Matrix?
Genesis?
Well, I mean, like, what does it matter? Like, was it like illegal?
No, he did something. It was like taking something that you knew wasn't going to quite work, but it would kind of work, but it would give you the results you want, but they wouldn't last. That's what it is.
Okay.
The proto matter is the thing that it's unstable.
God damn it. I hate gross shit. Oh, I know they're so fake, but
I love gross shit.
I have something I
go ahead.
I have to text you guys for a second because I'm not going to say this on the show.
All right, now I'm just going to wait with bated breath. I love the jelly that comes out of the things.
Maybe that was.
It really looks like great jelly.
Please pass the jelly.
Jelly.
I like this effect here. It's a cool lighting effect. You got the text, huh?
I mean, it wouldn't work if we did it on air.
Yeah, no one would know what I was talking about. That's why I'm like, I got
it. So, yeah, I mean, like, what is the deal with this? Now the sun just is going, now it's just going to be night on Genesis all the time.
Genesis! I'm just going to do that every time.
I always thought the proto-matter controversy was kind of like stem cells, like, and kind of like the whole Genesis project is like a big, just moral fucking, you know, kind of not really a political statement or anything, but just like, would it be ethical to do that to an entire planet? Just kind of like,
Are you telling me you are actually in favor of these experiments?
Well, I know, you're right. It is definitely a moral, ethical thing, or, you know, because if it was, as John said, if it was introduced where there was life, it would destroy such life. But I think it's funny, the idea that he's aging with the planet rapidly, and they just said, well, we'll just get him off.
Well, that's what Savick does in a little while, if you know what I mean.
Well, I mean,
all right. Too far.
You had to go there.
Yeah, I did.
8-year-old Matt Thurston didn't get any of that.
Yeah, I know. That's what she said.
Oh!
I can keep going all day.
All right. I won't even give you any more ammunition then. I was going to say something.
No, I promise I won't say anything this time
around. I was going to say 28-year-old Matt Thurston. Well, never mind.
Matt Painting.
So, like, David is trying to redeem himself a little bit here, I guess. Oh, I'm the man. I'll go fight the Klingon. Oh, yeah, turned off his collar.
Yeah, he changed his collar.
Like, you guys are making fun of me, and I do not like
I'm not the Wednesday.
I do not want to be Wednesday Adam.
Wednesday. I'm every day. Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Every day.
Because, you know, that also ties in with the Addams Family because Christopher Lloyd played Uncle Fester in the movies.
That's right.
Right.
Oh, it all comes back to Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, really?
I really wish they got him to do the voice. Somebody other than this guy to read the audiobook for Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I thought.
Well, I don't know. This is definitely an aside, but like, you don't really want Charlie Fleischer reading your audiobook.
No, I was thinking that too. Like you don't want him doing it either. You don't want him doing it. That's for sure. Sound alike.
So who? What? There was like a weird shot there of just legs, but I guess they were Savage. But it didn't really look like hers.
Oh my.
Here we go.
I remember this part, like, is this the part where Spock's face is like going weird too? Because that really freaked me out when I saw this. I was like, that's really gross.
I forget what I read, how many actors actually played Spock in this movie.
It's something like that. Yeah, it's six or seven or something. Maybe that was how many shirts Shatner had to have made.
No, that was 12. 12 shirts. But
Spock could have been a jock in an 80s movie right here.
It's like he's turning into Teen Wolf.
Kind of, yeah.
So essentially, Nimoy said that they're having Vulcan foreplay here.
Yeah.
So he's underage. So he's only like 14 or something at this part. But
give him a minute. Give him a minute. He'll be.
I mean, you gotta.
But this is the reason.
You gotta let it out.
This is don't hold it in.
Release.
This is the reason why Savick stays behind in Star Trek IV is to have Spock's baby.
No.
Yes. Yes. Nimoy said it from the Vulcan's mouth to your ears.
In this case, you're the Vulcan?
Well, no. I'm
so
just...
that's like a human Romulan Vulcan baby, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if human foreplay was.
Sometimes when me and the missus go out for a walk, I will jokingly say, don't hold my hands, do the thing that they do where Sarek and Amanda touch fingers, like two fingers
you
to each other.
No, I'm
not in public. That's just disgusting.
Come on.
All right, I'll be right back because it's that time.
Oh, he's gotta go find the missus.
Mark got me all hot and bothered. I'll be right back.
Did they ever make reference to Ponfar and other TV shows or anything? I don't really.
Almost in all. Well,
oh, yeah?
I mean, in other, just in the Vulcan lore, it comes up. There was definitely like episodes of Next Gen and of the other series that like where it comes up as like a plot point or whatever. But Ponfar was like, in the original
every
series.
Of a Vulcan's adult life, they said, right?
Yeah.
I think she says every 7 years. Yeah,
every 7 years. And in the original series,
they can work that shit in.
The first season, it was like a big thing where Spock got all hot and bothered. He was fighting Kirk. So I don't know if you were aware of that one.
Yeah. I don't remember the duel. But... So here's Kirk with the they're upset because, well, not upset, but they're distressed, I guess, because they don't know what's going to happen. They think they're holding hands. They think the Grissom is out there. They don't know it's been destroyed. Anyway, where's the Klingon? He's got his morning after.
I'm gonna put myself in the teenage boy when I was Spock's age right about here.
That's what she said.
I would say that both Kirstie Alley and this actress, what's her name? Robin or something, right?
Robin Curtis. Yes.
They were both in my area of expertise. Both equally hot, I think, for the role. I'm sorry to objectify the Saviks, but I'm saying they're both equally attractive ladies. And as a teenager, I would have been interested in them both equally, is what I'm saying. When Ponfar came around.
A real brunette thing you got going on there.
I like Kirstie Alley's straight hair better than the curly hair.
Mm. But it was still regulation.
Yeah, it was regulation. So it's okay. It's all good. Did she change her hair? She got a perm.
Frederick and Towns are perm. So I guess I wanted to bring up, is Krug, Kruge, whichever, how
is he being like a Krug for short?
Is he being a like is he being a patriot, or is he like, I just want this Genesis ship for myself, or is he doing it for the Klingon Empire?
He's doing it for a little of both, personal glory, and then you bring this to the Klingon Empire, you reap the rewards.
I feel like the line that he said earlier, where he says, you know, you're a woman playing with your feet and flying above it the flag of the Federation. Like, he's really just sort of anti-Federation.
Oh, yeah, he is, but a lot of Klingons are.
Yeah. This is probably the first we've seen the Klingons in a while. They are really...
We saw them at the beginning of the motion picture, but that was they didn't really do much except get absorbed into V'ger.
Harv Bennett felt that they weren't fleshed out enough, so that's why he wanted to be Klingon. Romulans originally the villain.
Yeah, the Romulans, and that's what the Bird of Prey is. A Romulan was supposed to be a Romulan ship, and that's why it has the like the feather design on the underside of the wing. Because if you watch the aforementioned Balance of Terror episode, there's a bird motif on the bottom of that ship.
Right. Another funny thing that came out in my brother's discussion was like in the comic book version of the comic book adaptation, the distortion that they're talking about here was just like a giant blob. How do you draw it, you know, on the page as well as you can on the screen? My brother, like, I didn't really get it. It was just a giant blob.
I feel that the DC Comics Star Trek was much better than the Marvel Comics Star Trek comics. Like when they had the license for Star Trek the Motion Picture, and they had it for like a year or two or something. And then when Star Trek II came out, DC Comics had the license because their comics started like in the fall after the Wrath of Khan came out, and I much preferred that. I thought the illustrations were better, and they actually used reference when drawing the Enterprise. But if you look at some Marvel comics, there's one drawn by Gil Kane.
Awful.
And it's awful, just, I'm like, those whoa, what is going on? Yeah.
They look like I drew it. And like,
man, here it is.
Like you drew it with your eyes closed, and you were like roofied or something, you know?
John, is this the ship you just built?
And then we see, though, like, this is like Captain Kirk is just kind of better, right? Because he's like, I saw that distortion, and now I know to shoot there.
Yeah, no, Kirk has
got... Oh, and there goes the Fifi Beeblebrox, or whatever the hell the thing was called.
Fifi Rebozo.
Rebozo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Beeblebrox is from Hitchhiker's Guide. Staffon Beeblebrox. Yes. Yes.
I know.
Nice one, though. That's awesome.
I realize that now.
We just watched the BBC TV show and the movie, and Stacy listened to the audiobook for the first time. So we're all into Hitchhiker's Guide around here.
Nice.
This guy, they don't even have any red shirts to go flying here.
Yeah, we don't even have red shirt Brian to
throw him up.
Hey, guys.
Of course, everybody in the movies at this point is a red shirt because everybody's got a red uniform.
Except Sulu.
Well, I mean uniform. You're not in your civvies.
Civvies.
Did you guys hear me crack one open?
One shot. They're done.
I didn't hear you crack anything. I didn't hear you crack wise.
I cracked open a Red Bull.
Nice.
Oh, very well.
That shot for right there, I sort of recreated with my 1/350 scale Enterprise and Katinga models shot that in front of a Starfield background and posted it on Instagram.
Where did you get these Starfield backgrounds?
I just ordered it on eBay. It's a giant vinyl sheet of just stars. And then I just shot some cool lighting on it, and bam. You got yourself some starships in space, and I just Photoshop out the stands. I try to do everything in camera, you know?
I was going to say, you could probably do a lot of that stuff.
Absolutely amazing.
You could do it, though, pretty convincingly, though, because you're so good. You would, like, anytime you have stuff on a Photoshop background, I can never tell.
Well, I try not to do a lot of... I like to do everything in camera and not... The only things I like to do is, like, some stand removal and, you know, if, like... if I'm taking a picture outside and I caught a piece of like a tree in a sky background, I'll Photoshop that up. But otherwise,
you're removed.
That's exactly what I say.
Dearth in the fire.
Because anybody can take a picture of something and then Photoshop it into a different background. You know, that's easy.
Well, I can. But sure. Theoretically, anyone
did. That's easy to do, but to set up a whole shot and do it in camera, that's difficult.
And reading.
I had people asking me about a Millennium Falcon shot that I did where there's like it's taken in front of a lake with this fog, and they're like, "How'd you do that?" And I was like, "I took my model, I stuck it on a rock, and it was a foggy morning, and I took the picture." There's no Photoshop trickery to this. It's all real.
I thought you took your ships into space.
Oh well, I have flown them into space before.
So. Anyways, I do like the fact that Christopher Lloyd, however you pronounce his name, was not fooled by Kirk's, like, rather bad, like, "You will surrender immediately." He's like, "I'm not going to do that."
Yeah.
He
wasn't taken by Kirk's bravado. He didn't.
Right.
He called his bluff.
Yeah. He's hiding. And I also sometimes say that line reason. Always trust your instincts. It was in that game that you used to have too. There was a line that said, "Always trust your instincts."
That Star Trek game we used to try to play of Star Trek 5.
Yeah, but we would only get like two levels in, and then
because that game was weird, but it looked awesome for the time.
Yeah. I shall kill one of the person. So, okay, I have like a theory that he would have been more upset if they killed Spock.
Probably because he went all this way to do this.
And he didn't really know that his son was there, so it's kind of like, well, that's kind of just...
Well,
like
he's also known Spock for a lot longer. But, at the same time, if your son was killed...
Flesh and blood.
I always did like that knife, though, when I was young. Yeah. So David at least does some heroic.
Yeah. I mean, he gets slapped around like a little bitch, then stabbed. But, I mean, at least he was doing something, right. You know.
He was saving Savick's life. Dead.
And Spock's life.
But according to Shatner, this was like the seminal Kirk moment. Not the seminal Savick moment.
No.
What do you got to say? But this is a
moment of vulnerability for Kirk.
This is Kirk's greatest moment on celluloid, I think, was the quote.
Both Shatner and Nimoy talk about this filming this moment and getting to the heart of Shatner's
They
talk about it in their biographies. They talk about it in the books. Just filming the scene.
Klingon bastards. I mean, it is a part. Let them guilt too. I mean, everything. Kirk is just. I mean, so we didn't mention this earlier, but like Leonard Nimoy wanted this movie to be about brotherhood and friendship and you know, like, and here's Kirk sacrificing everything for his friend. The needs of the one outweighing the needs of the many. There we go. We're going over there.
From their data tapes.
Their own data tapes. I love that, like, holding on to Bones for a quick second. He's not done.
Seems like there should be more guys on the Klingon ship there.
Well, the bird of prey. I guess it's not a real battle, right? I swear to you, we're not finished yet.
You can see this is probably shirt like 5 or 6 here for Shatner.
There's a little. I don't know how flattering that, the.
That belt should maybe be pulled up a little bit or just suck in the gut there, Kirk. Put that girdle on that you wore back in the original. That happened on the original series, too, that he would go up and down with weight, especially in season 3. You can see, like, he's put on weight. And apparently during, like, the screening of one of the episodes, one of the producers was going to say something to him. And then Kirk was like, all right, Shatner was like, all right, I'm going to go on a strict diet now, and went and lost some weight.
But, I mean, apparently he went up and down. So it's like, how do you just...
You should have got one of those injections. Like,
yeah, right. I always thought it was interesting that different, like, oh, the chief engineer officer, they worthy to blow up the Enterprise.
Well, you know, everybody's got to have something to do, you know, in case something's not there. It's a chain of command thing. But this the sequence, all this destruct stuff, is all in the episode... Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, the one where Frank Gorshin, he's like, are you blind, Mr. Spock? He's black on one on the left side, and I'm black on the right. You know, that one. Because they were going to. So it's all, so they, all the same.
Good one.
So Harv Bennett apparently thought this was the best way to combat the predictability of the search for Spock. Like, the idea that Spock would obviously be brought back. Like, well, we'll do something else.
Yes. Which, we'll again, allegedly, Roddenberry leaked this to the fans. Like, he did.
Well, I think it was on the commercial, wasn't it?
Well, it did eventually show up on the commercial. I remember that because I didn't see the movie until a week or two after it had been out. And I had a friend, Matt Donovan, and we were on some field trip for school, and he had already seen it. And I was like, tell me everything. Yeah. So
tell me everything.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning.
Yeah. I knew everything that was going to happen because, you know, I needed to know.
I like this effect though. Like, literally they beam out and the Klingons beam right in. But like, okay. So I'm just going to start on this rant right now. Blowing up the Enterprise was like the biggest deal back in
1984.
Blowing up the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, at the time, I felt like Kramer did for a long time. I thought this was the best. I liked this movie better because it had the death of Kirk's son. It had the destruction of the Enterprise. It was it was like acting. You know, there was drama.
There was a lot of drama.
I've since reversed my decision. I think Wrath of Khan is the better film, but. Right. I don't buy into the whole the odd numbered movies are the crappy movies. I think this movie disproves that. I think this is a solid film. It's not the greatest film of all time, but it's well written. The characters are extremely well written for like someone who never watched a show. Harv Bennett got the interactions of the characters as a writer.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And this.
But this was. Oh my god, like I can't. It's so. Like, they just.
And the effect of the Enterprise, that was done with like, they're dropping like acid on like a wax thing. And then, like, the stuff was, what do you call it? Like SOS pads. What was that? The steel wool that they lit on fire. So it's like spark and stuff.
I mean, it looks, if you're going to kill the Enterprise, you've got to make it look good. but I got to say, like, I feel like future, like, movies.
But, like, you can see the wrinkles.
They blew up
the
Enterprise
background.
All the time. Like, they just, you know, and it just didn't make any difference anymore.
Yeah.
This time, oh my God, I was upset as a kid.
Well, I mean, this is the first time they do it. The first time was the best time they did it. And because the Enterprise. Was like just as much of a character as anyone else in the show.
Exactly.
100%. The Enterprise was a character.
And that idea, like Bones, makes it okay. He's like, what you have to do. You did what you had to do, Jim. It's death into a fighting chance to live. I mean, like, they just blew up the Enterprise. They killed Kirk's son. The whole planet's about to fucking blow up. It's crazy. these Klingons are really like, what the hell is going on? This kid. Oh, now if I had sex with you, it wouldn't be bad. Now, is that the Frank Welker? Or is that somebody else? You guys here?
What happened? Sorry, I had my thing off. Sorry.
Well, I'm watching.
Oh, I love it. Hit that rock.
Oh, this must be the part I'm thinking of where Spock's face is like moving around. Yeah.
This point on the yeah. fuck with
it
her.
Looks super fake to me now, but weird. At the time I was
It does look just weird though. It's a weird shape and everything. A little bubbling up. A bubbling crude.
I wish the phasers had a better sound effect here coming up. There.
That looks good.
Guy looked like he's having a pretty cool ride.
So that's all the action you'll get in this movie.
What about the action on Far?
I know. That was that part, too.
Yeah, don't that call was action. Time.
That was the big fight scene.
Oh, this sad moment. Admiral, David is dead. So what's you got going on? it's a sad moment.
Of course,
Savage is emotionless. So what is she supposed to say?
There's the whole. There's also the whole. I'm gonna go off topic here. Sorry. The
which shirt is this?
The fire. The fire that happened on the Paramount lot almost destroyed this stage of the where they were filming the Genesis planet. Genesis planet. Shatner's taking off his shirt and stuff.
Right.
That physique. But Shatner was one of the people that ran in with like a garden hose to help try to keep the flames under control until the fire department got there. And apparently Harv Bennett was like, that was good publicity for the movie. Captain Kirk saves Paramount, you know?
Yep.
Oh, he cared. He didn't do it for the publicity.
He did it because he wanted to get back to TJ Hooker on time.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
He's like, which tracksuit am I wearing now? What job am I at?
Well, it's funny when you look at that prop culture show, which I've hyped up a couple times already in this podcast, like how Disney is actually doing a lot to preserve their old props and everything. So yeah, I mean, it's sad when those things go away, honestly.
Yeah. As they say on a planet, ta-ta.
I picked up that line in Darth and the Firestarter, but I do love that line. Sorry about your crew, but we stay on our planet. Still love you. Like, I mean, like, I just blew up 12 guys.
Yeah.
But you also.
This is also like, this is sort of like the part where he's yelling at Khan. He's like, you're going to have to come down here, whatever.
Right.
Very kind of.
I think it's funny that like, Christopher Lloyd is upset that his guys are all dead. He's like sad.
Well, even though well, you know what? Because they're warriors, they have a bond. You know?
Yeah, they are deeply emotional.
Well, that's different. That guy was a dope.
Here it is. Yeah, right. Here it is. There's the Klingon painting, transporting effect. This is Christopher Lloyd at his best going up here, this whole scene. I mean, these two guys.
It's great when Christopher Lloyd fights Shatner's stunt double. Now Shatner looks like thinner here.
He does. Which shirt is this?
Oh, hi, that.
Three? Shirt three?
Yeah, three? That's shirt two or three.
Oh, I mean, that's like key right there. He hears him say the Klingon word for beat me up. So my brother also, I know I keep talking about my brother for no reason, but he also had a theory that.
The first, so it's cool.
Yeah. When he gives them I give 2 minutes for you and your gallant crew. My brother thought that maybe he was showing a little bit of, you know, like leniency or whatever. I think he was just being arrogant.
He's, you know, he's got a warrior's code of honor.
A warrior code. So he really was giving 2 minutes for him to get on crew.
Yeah. Yeah. Which he really did. The time that he needed.
I thought he did it because he was and he knew he had him.
Well, a little of everything.
Yeah. It's
well, what shirt is that Kirk's wearing here? You know, where he's going.
I mean, that doesn't look like it would hurt at all.
No. Yeah, that's the see, this is the problem with Star Trek fight scenes of the original cast. They're all like in their 50s and they're kind of getting saggy, a little heavy, and it, you know, even on the original show, fight scenes weren't very good because they were like TV fight scenes. And if you watch the show now in high definition, you can see that everybody is a stunt double, you know.
Well, that's a great move right there by Kirk jumping off down on the
floor. Yeah, that's great. Like,
but the rest of it is pretty. You're right. It's not like watching.
You're stuck with what you're stuck with. You're stuck with a guy that's 50 something years old. He's getting a little heavy. You're stuck with like a cheap budget and set that it's like, you know. So you work within your parameters, like, because that's a really bad effect when that piece of rock falls off.
Kirk doesn't even actually beat him. He just Kirk's kind of falls off.
Yeah, Kirk's wearing some nice shoes here, too. He's wearing some nice dress shoes. Of course, this is a famous scene here. Yeah. The J.J. The Kelvin Trek movies do well is the action, because they've got a young cast and everything's very dynamic and it's, you know, kinetic and hyperactive and stuff. But you couldn't do that with these guys at this point, you know. Hey, I think if
1984, I love that scene. I don't care what you're talking about.
But I also think that 50 years old in 1984 is different than 50 years old now. Like if you look at Daniel Craig now. You know, it's a different time. So I think we're back.
Floyd, even
I can't say.
I don't know, but he was not. He was probably closer to 50 than not. I'll say that. So they weren't. I mean, he might have been older. Yeah.
You know what's interesting about Christopher Lloyd is you watch any interview with him, and he's very low key and quiet, and like very mumbly. You can barely hear him. But all his performances are always very loud and over the top and boisterous.
What a great actor he is. I go back and watch Jim from Taxi Now, and I'm like, what a brilliant character. Yeah, what amazing. Yeah.
That's what my pop was like that. He just kept making a reference to this an episode of Taxi where Jim had found blueberries. They weren't really blueberries. They were like poison berries. And my father was watching this while he just kept, the blueberries aren't blueberries, you know.
Was it like a genius piano player too, or something on one episode, where he just like
I don't know.
I forget. Oh, there were just so many great episodes. Here's Dan Larroquette. John Larroquette.
Dan Larroquette as John Fielding.
Dan Fielding, John Larroquette.
But I like his Klingon character in this. He's like the thinking man's Klingon.
Yes, that's what Leonard Nimoy called him, actually. The thinking Klingon.
Well, how about that? Me and Nimoy.
Good job.
Cheers.
But I love the line where, like, you know, he says, I do not deserve to live. It's a fine kid player. Like, when did he kill him later? We never thought.
No, he doesn't. He lied. He said, you kill me. I lied.
Oh, that's right. So when I want to find the novelization of his character. What happened to Dan?
Of Dan Field, Dan Klingon. Yeah.
Probably is something. Probably is. So many books and stuff.
I'll write the comic if no one else has. So
working into the Discovery.
But they didn't know that taking Spock off of Genesis wouldn't
stop his aging. He aged at just the right point.
I guess and he just happened to be the same age as Spock was.
Don't look it. You just got to go with it. You know, it's just sort of like in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. You just got to go with the fact that they're in 1986, the same year that the movie comes out.
Double dumb.
So Leonard Nimoy said, "This is the hardest scene to direct because he can't look and watch and see where McCoy is or the camera is or anything. He just has to kind of go on feel here. So this is really hard. This was the hardest scene, he said, for him, personally. Even though he's literally just laying there.
It was an easy scene to act in, a difficult scene to direct.
But to direct, because he didn't know where anything was.
They didn't have iPads back then. It looked what? Like this. See?
Well, that's
don't
true.
Get up. Don't get up. See? That's what it looks like.
Well, apparently DeForest Kelly thought he was trying to send him direction with it by fluttering his eyelids.
Well, how about that?
Huh? See.
Yeah.
Faster, more intense? Okay, got it. The Bird of Prey model had a couple different wing configurations so that when it was like in just like cruising mode, the wings were like out to its side. And then when it was in attack mode, it would like the wings would raise up further.
That's really cool. I like that.
And so the like the mechanics of that worked in this film, but later on they kept reusing this model. They just broke, so they just kept it in the same configuration all the time.
So the wings did go up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forget about that. Let's just leave them like that.
He broke it.
And George Takei got that large mole over his eye removed eventually.
Oh, that's was it cancerous or something?
I think, I don't know. It just, it's not there anymore if you look at him now.
I've been hanging out here on Vulcan, do you suppose?
The shadow was bugged because there was no shadow underneath the ship, so it never looked like it fully landed. And here's your one location shot coming up here when they walk down the stairs. Not when they walk out of the ship, but when you see. Okay, I'll wait for it.
Wait for it.
That shot, the shot where they're all like lined up along the staircase.
Wow.
It's
they had all these people show up for that one.
Until part of it is a matte painting.
Matte painting. I'm drinking.
And Uhura's changed out of her skirt into her trousers.
Her Vulcan pants.
Yeah. Are you out of your Vulcan mind? All right, I'll be right back.
Can the conversation, we got a guy here. I suppose we should talk about Dame Judith Anderson here, who was only about 4'8", even though she lists herself as 5'2". So to make her appear a little taller and more regal, they dressed her in this sort of dressy outfit thing, and so that they could put high heel shoes on her, give her a little more height. And also that hat gave her a little more height as well. So she ended up being closer to like a regal height. But she was 87 years old, Clay. Can you believe that? 87 years old. I know nowadays 50 is like 40, but 87 is still 87.
87 has been 87 for a long time.
87 and 84 was like 97, right?
Yeah, right.
There it is. But she does look short there. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. They did their best.
She's a short lady.
Nobody was like, I wonder how tall they're going to make that lady.
I know. Nobody cared. But they just wanted her to appear, regal.
A couple of apple boxes or whatever they call it, right? Probably under there.
That is apple breaks. Yeah. I love those women just doing the right turn signal there.
Yeah, on the set of the mummy.
So, but she was a dame. Like, I
no, I'll tell you, she's a dame.
No, that like dame had gams like, up to her,
up to her eyeballs, just like Uhura.
Eyeballs.
As a kid, I thought it was the same woman from the motion picture who yelled at Spock for the Kolinar.
Colonar are different than Pong.
Well, it's a dame. It's a real dame, I tell you.
They're both
a real 4'8" dame. She's a shorty. So are you good with this? They're basically asking McCoy if he's cool transferring the Katra.
I choose the danger. Hell of a time to ask.
I know. That's funny. I mean, of course he's going
to. Again, I'm saying that Harv Bennett got McCoy, you know.
Right.
What do you think Roddenberry
real hesitation
this movie?
Well, Roddenberry was like, "Don't destroy the Enterprise and replace it with the Excelsior. I've got a better idea: time travel, JFK."
Yeah, he's been pitching that one for years. But I mean, yeah, like the idea that like McCoy fought with Spock constantly, and they seemingly didn't like each other, and would Spock do this for him? Absolutely.
It was a brotherly thing, you know. They bickered and argued, but they loved each other deep down.
The Holy right. Trinity, bro.
That's absolutely right. This is it. This Kirk sacrifices his son and his ship. McCoy is, he doesn't know what's going to happen here. He doesn't know if
that
he's
lady's wearing
this.
A huge ring.
That lady is wearing a huge ring.
I don't believe in God, but I believe in Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Her ring.
She's got another huge ring. If she had a huge nose ring, it would totally work.
Oh, man.
All right. I'm on my second beer.
That's it?
I know. I kind of took it easy.
Movie's almost over.
I can have one more, right?
Yeah, quick. There's like 10 minutes left of this movie, if that.
We're going to do a run-through, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I don't know if you remember movie programs where they would make special little like magazine editions, things that they would sell at the concession stands.
I have a couple of those. I have Superman the movie and Popeye the movie right here.
Wow. Yeah.
Awesome. Popeye the movie? What a strange choice.
I love Popeye the movie.
I wavered back and forth on getting this one, and our friend Scott Slaney ended up getting it for a, you know, who knows where that is now, because I think he just bought it because he wanted to spend money. But
probably wanted to take it away from you.
No, well, I think there were multiple copies, so I could have gotten one, but yeah, you know.
They're
not expensive. You could probably get one for $5.
Yeah, maybe I'll look on eBay after I get out of here. Matt painting.
That painting.
It looks very much like Tatooine, actually, right there. I feel like Jabba's palace should be sitting up there.
But. Yes, but then when we cut to the stage that they're filming on, looks like a stage.
It really does.
Yeah, like at the time, I didn't notice this stuff. I didn't notice. Oh, they're on a soundstage. It didn't bother me. But now I'm like, oh boy, this just looks like. Well, there's a painted line in the background. And in a couple of the shots, the one where they're watching the Enterprise, burn up in flames in the atmosphere, you can see the wrinkles on the backdrop behind them. So,
oh, my God.
Now they shoot it all in front of a green screen, you know.
But, I mean, I guess and then would people know it's, or is it the kind of thing you're meant to see it once and never see it again?
Well, home video is a thing. In 84. Yeah. So, I say, Star Trek 2 was the first movie I rented on video from our local video store that we ended up working at eventually. And that was like, you know, 83 or so that was. So,
right. Yeah. So they knew.
Yeah. But, you know, Nimoy was like, we've got no budget. And that just looks like a line. And he says to the cinematographer, just try to blur that background out so it's not so obvious.
Right. They did what they could. And they did the best with what they had.
Yeah. That's all you can do.
So I guess, I don't know if I should have mentioned this earlier. So the big line coming up. This is where Harv Bennett started writing the script.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He started from the back, from the end.
He wrote backwards. Yeah. He wrote. And I know there's like a theory in writing where you're supposed to write backwards, but like literally he wrote this line first and then wrote the entire movie from there.
I feel like I would really like Harv Bennett if I had known him. He seems like a guy that I would have been like, yeah, no, I agree. All your stuff about your theories on writing and production, I agree with wholeheartedly. You seem like a nice man.
He seemed pretty practical.
By all accounts, he was well-liked by the cast.
And
until we get to Star Trek 4.
They didn't like him in four?
Well, I'm just going to say him and Nimoy clashed over things. Oh. And apparently this look that Savik gives Spock is like, Nimoy was like, how would you feel if you saw a lover on the street that, you know, you hadn't seen in years? Because she had ponfard with him, you know, so she was a little like, oh, yeah, we did the deed.
He had that same ponfard look. Do you ponfard? That was a little weird.
He's do you fondue?
With all these people. Ponfard with you. Ponfard with you. It's been a long out in space for a long time. Especially ponfard with you. Disco D.
Disco D doesn't advertise.
It's like Disco Stoop. I love that dude.
I'm going to make a t-shirt, moment. Disco D.
Disco D.
People would be like, what's that, Ron Swanson on your shirt? No, it's Disco D.
Leonard Nimoy, it's like, you're fat.
I can't believe I kissed you.
You're fat. You shirt number five.
He's not even really fat yet either.
No,
you
he's
know?
Fine here. I feel like they shot this later.
I feel in Star Trek V, with the exception of Disco D, everybody's fat. You know, they're wearing those unflattering outfits where they're, you know, like those one-piece jumpsuits that just do not do any favors to their physique.
Yeah.
Siren.
You see, I don't know. Leonard Nimoy looks kind of mad here. He's like, what the hell is he? What are you talking about?
He has no idea what's happening.
I was dead, man. Shit.
Who's Jim?
Jim's fine.
Jim has seen a lot of gyms, but he's never seen another gym like he's had with Jim. There was an orange juice ad running at around the time. It was like, orange is smart for drinking orange juice. And they would all point to their heads. And I always thought it would be great if they'd cut to DeForest doing that. Yeah. To Disco D if they had done that.
But that was a great, I mean, like, we laughed, but that was like the Jim, your name is Jim moment was
also
amazing.
Also, matte painting.
Matte painting.
But great shot.
My show continues. It's like the Guardians of the Galaxy. What turn? Oh, now they're going to play Spider Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I'm going to get the Flash Gordon animated series.
James B. Sicking, Psyking, Psych, whatever his name is. And as Spock, a bunch of guys.
Spock.
Imagine Spock. If it went by like really fast, like to do like a.
Or Dea Potenza.
So that was Star Trek 3.
Yay! Star Trek 3.
The movie that I saw, whenever it was on TV, I would watch it. Halfway through what?
Halfway through the Kirk one, unless you consider Generations. I don't know.
I said original series. I'm not. I'd like if we're halfway through the Kirk ones, it'll be halfway through the next movie.
I'm willing to go to 7. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
My special makeup appliance.
Don't skip any. So if you want to stop at a certain point, I'm happy with.
I will do all the movies that feature Captain Kirk, which means the original series, Generations, and the Universe.
I will do.
I don't know enough about Next Generation, despite the fact that I worked on Ghost.
Hey, the Swing Gang, Charlie and Ron. Woo!
Yeah.
Those guys are. Swing.
Tom Sawyer.
All right, so let's give our final thoughts. A boys.
Springer's final thoughts.
Yeah. Springer and Arsene.
I'll start.
You want me to go?
No, Blake will start.
Because I don't have much. I don't have a lot to say except for that. You guys were way more prepared. I didn't know this was such a touch. cornerstone movie in the Durson household was above stuff with your brother. This is just a movie that I saw, and every time it was on TV, just like Empire Strikes Back and the other Star Trek movies, I would watch it. And boy, did I fucking love it every time it was on. And yeah, we get Spock. And
yeah, boy.
When I was reading the all these biographies, I was learning more about Nimoy's process and how he felt about directing the movie, and how Kirk and, I mean, how Shatner and Nimoy both like used directing as a tool with their agents to get fucking shit that they wanted. So it's just fucking rad. I love this movie. That's it. I'm done.
All right. Very well. Matt Artist. Oh, very well. Matt Camera Supervisor. They were very busy. All right. I'm gonna go along. I'm gonna say, I mean, I love this movie, as Clay does. Not as much as Star Trek II, the Metacron, obviously. I would just say, I think part of this is because, like, John was talking about seeing with his dad, and like I saw it probably with my dad, probably with my grandfather or grandmother or brother or whoever could take me back then, because I love seeing like Star Trek and Star Wars movies in the theaters, and I would go and see them as many times as I could. So, yeah, I love this movie. I know that like nostalgia is...
It's not a perfect movie, but...
It's not a perfect movie, right. And nostalgia is like our most basic emotion, but I can't help it. I love this. It's fun. It's a fun movie to watch. It's not great.
And so fun.
But it's such a fun movie, and I will never not think so. That's it. That's the way it is.
And my feelings on it are 1984, that was a good summer for movies. You had your Indiana Jones. You had your Star Trek. You had your... Last Starfighter, your Gremlins, your Ghostbusters.
Oh, Ghostbusters. Man, yeah. That is a good summer.
It was a good summer. It was a good summer for films. And so it just felt like every week there was something great to watch. And this was fun. Thank you, Matt Donovan, for telling me what happened in case, you know, I died before I got to see it.
No.
And my old man built the Enterprise model, which I just texted a picture of it to the both of you. And we hung it out on my dog's like run in the backyard, and he had his camera set with the f-stop thing, you know, and we put on the backlight, and it was nighttime, and so it looked like it was flying, and then my friends in school thought it was like...
I never would have done that. In fact, he didn't do that.
Yeah.
He didn't do it. And he never would have.
So I enjoyed this film. I love all the original series films. Wow. I think Star Trek V is great too. I know everyone thinks that's a turd, but I still love it.
Dumb movie, but I will watch it.
A bad Star Trek movie is still better than A Good Day at Work.
That's true. It's like the pizza. The pizza.
That is
theory,
a great way to describe
the pizza theory, that it's, you know.
Yeah.
All good pizza.
Bad
pizza
is still good pizza. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like sex.
I want to say I agree with, like, so the other yesterday we were just, you know, we're sitting around the house, there's nothing to do, and Starship Troopers was on, right? And so it's like, all right, I'll watch Starship Troopers because it's a fun, dumb movie. It's a dumb movie. It's the dumbest movie you can imagine. But even watching that, I'm like, wow, this movie's so dumb. It's just the fucking dumbest movie. Like,
it's such a dumb movie.
Thinking?
We walked out of it.
That's what we walked out seeing it. I know, like, Mystery Science Theater does it, and it's dumb. It's dumb. But, like, not even dumb funny. Like, this is dumb. This movie is dumb. But I watched Star Trek V.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm like, this,
you know,
is a dumb movie, but this is such fun. Like, I love watching
it. Here's
dumb
the thing
movie.
With Star Trek V. There's a good movie in there. It's just not realized.
Right.
I love all of these Starship stuff and all the uniform changes, and just any time there's a
the
Star
12
Trek
shirts
thing on TV. Yeah, 12 shirts, 70 shirts, Shatner needs this time, doesn't matter, I don't know. And was it I think they talked about it on the Wrath of Khan extras, but that the guy made sure that all the insignia and all the ranks were like cataloged somehow. It looks like they did a lot of that in here.
Yes.
Like they had some emblems and stuff in the background that I was like, it was too quick to point them out. I would just talk to other people, but there's like they're in a lounge and they walk by and there's the medical badge and the, all these little badges and like all this little. I love all that stuff. So that stuff continues way at the five for sure.
Yes.
They put a lot of thought into these movies, all of them, yeah. All six of them, seven, however many you want to determine that we're going to go through.
We're going to end up doing, 10 or something like that if we do the all Kirk movies. But if we have Clay's way, we're going to do like 45 of them, which I'm willing to do Next Generation. I just cannot stand that one with F. Murray Abrams, whatever his name is. I just cannot stand that movie. Even though it has Mr. Goodbye in it. Mr. Goodbye is the bad guy in it, the Federation bad guy, but that movie is terrible.
Big Murray.
Only two people on earth that get that reference.
Yeah, but I'll explain the reference if we have to do that movie. That's the only thing I have to add to that movie. When they start singing
that movie, that's going to be rough. I have nothing to add to that movie.
I'm going to have to drink a lot of vodka and like do a lot of coke or something to get through that one.
I don't want to push my completest agenda on you guys. We'll take it one thing at a time. We haven't skipped any yet. If we start skipping people, my head's gonna twitch. I'll be like, why are we skipping?
No,
why
are we
skipping? Skip. Yeah, but that's still two against one though.
I'll do it if we can all be together. John and I can get drunk together in the same room.
Oh man, that'd be
nice.
Yeah.
If we can start hanging out again.
Yeah,
that would be great.
By then this disease will have magically or mysteriously or miraculously disappeared or whatever it was said.
Sure, so, by the 23rd century they'll have come up.
Yeah,
with it.
I mean we still have three more original series movies to get through, and then
right. So let's two not get next generation. Let's not get cocky.
So
let's get
cocky. Right. Yeah. We're mixing our metaphors now by Star Trek and Star Wars. So we should wrap this shit up, right?
Between both.
Yeah, I think we gave all we need to give. Thank you so much for
we pon-farred all over it.
Like pon-farred all over it is right. But I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I had a good time watching that movie again, reliving it as much as I can. I've enjoyed watching it. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening. Check us out.
This poster is cool, the little thing they have for on Amazon, the little preview for it with Spock's head all glowing. Pew, pew, pew.
I love the movie poster for this. It's great.
Mine thinks has Shatner talking into the communicator going, 22, and it's a great moment. It's a great Shatner moment. As I say on our planet, they love you.
And with that, I say to you, live long and fuck off. Live long and fuck off.